good morning. Cheryl McGill here, and it's the New Medicine Show. I am so happy to once again have the privilege of being Adam Atman, or attempting to be Adam Atman. And for those of you who are Adam Atman fans, I think you would all agree, those are difficult shoes to fill. Fortunately, I have some help today. And that person is Tony McGettigan. Tony McGettigan, a welcome voice here at KKUP.
Thanks, Cheryl.
Oh, always. And so happy to have this role reversal, Tony. I remember when you were the one who would interview me so long ago, about 12 years ago,
yeah,
actually.
That's, right, yeah.
That's it, about 12 years ago. So this is a fun moment. Gee, it's been a while. And for those of you who are familiar with Tony's program, programs, plural, he's had several here. He is, what is the correct term, shamanic astronomer?
Yeah, that's good. That's the sky work that I do, yeah.
That's the sky work. You're so much more than that, of course. Author?
Yeah.
Author and volunteer programmer here at KKUP.
Yeah.
All right. So let's see. How is your sound level doing there, Tony?
It sounds good in my head.
Okay, good. I understand things are looking up.
There's a lot of things happening that are really remarkable. And because we've had such clear weather this winter, a lot of people may have already been noticing some of the things that are going on.
You know, the last few days I was actually a few, little bit disappointed. As long as I could see the rain was coming down, I knew that was a good thing. But, oh, I had gotten so excited about what was going on overhead. And I was sad to realize I couldn't be watching with the configuration of the planet. I'd go out a few times every night just to see if the clouds had cleared enough, because I wanted that front row seat.
Well, what's wonderful is that we have some really significant things that are going on that we can actually watch throughout this year. And they're happening right now. They've been happening since actually the very beginning of 2012, and they're going to continue throughout the year. And some of them are spectacular, and we'll talk about all of these things that are unfolding before us.
They are spectacular, and I believe that's what I'm hearing from the people. I've done my own opinion poll, you see. And the thing that everyone seems to have a viewpoint on is the fact that it's right in their face. It's not some little dot in an obscure location of the sky that it takes someone schooled in the art of astronomy to actually point out. Rather, it's like, wow, did you see that? Did you look up and see those planets? And they're all in alignment, and what's going on with that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, in fact, I was sharing with you that there was a friend of mine who said she found it absolutely mesmerizing.
Oh.
She had to keep going outside and checking on it, and her husband had a curiosity. What's going on? What are you looking at? You know, why do you keep going outside? And, you know, it was like one of those things where everybody was scared, the winter grumpies, and nobody was really being their higher self at that time. You know, they were just kind of going through their mundane routines. And this elevated them, you know. This brought them to a keener understanding, maybe reduced a little stress or strife, or added a little mystery to their lives.
Yeah, it's funny. And you mentioned that the dynamic of your friend and her husband. The dominant players that are in these events this year, right now, it's Venus and Jupiter, and they're high together in the west right after sunset. As a matter of fact, during these last couple of months, every time the moon comes through there, soon after it's a new moon, the moon attracts attention because it lines up first with Venus and then with Jupiter. Well, what's happening is Venus is gradually climbing up and going to meet Jupiter, and they're going to come together, I think they'll be exactly together on the evening of March 13th. What's really striking about that is their exact alignment will happen just at sunset on March 13th. So when we see them together on March 13th, they'll be as close visually as we'll see them, and then Venus is going to pass Jupiter and move on up.
Well, now, this is interesting because you say that they're aligned, but is that the term aligned is a one that always confuses me. Does that mean that it is a visual alignment,
yeah,
or are we simply impressed also with the gravitational influences?
Well, for this one, it's that Venus is passing Jupiter from the perspective, the way we measure this stuff is relative to our point of view in the sky, of course, because we're looking at how things move as we move. And so when you line everything up and you measure from, you know, what is north and south and east and west to us, and then you put the whole sky against that. So we're measuring against our position in the sky and then where Jupiter and Venus is. And that happens to be the day when they'll be closest and when Venus will pass Jupiter, we also say conjunct.
Conjunct, meaning that it's...
They're together.
Yeah, they're... Okay. So from these influences, we know that all this other stuff is going on inside of us.
Well, that's a good one, and I think that the way to address that, because a lot of people say, oh no, that couldn't possibly be. Well, I think if you deal with it in the way that I'm most struck by it, it's energy, it's resonance. So when you see something on television or when you experience something, you hear about a news story around the world, sometimes it hits you, right? You have that feeling in your heart or in your gut, or it strikes you with an idea, right? Those are resonances. So if we have resonances in the human sphere, in the human experience, what this kind of thing also teaches us is that there are resonances that exist throughout the natural world, throughout the sky, throughout the earth. The whole universe is something that's energetically resonant. That's a scientific truth. Well, we can actually have our own direct experience of that. And that's what my approach to the sky and astronomy and astrology has to do with.
Well, we're all influenced by cycles. Certainly the daily cycle of the sun and the moon. I have a bird, and as soon as that sun goes down, it's like I'm ready for sleep. Period. You know, he's ready. His cycle is completed for that day, and daylight savings time doesn't matter. He knows his cycle,
yeah,
and it's in alignment with that sun.
Yeah,
and of course, as human beings, we have weekly cycles, monthly cycles, and then cycles of maturation every 7 years. You're a mature child at seven. At 14, you're a mature teenager. You're fully into your teenage years. You're in 21, you're into your adult years. So we have these cycles that we all acknowledge as being endemic to our existence on this planet. So why wouldn't those cycles be aligned with the planets? I mean, that argument has to be supported on the other side, too, that someone would have to show the disproof of it because there's too much evidence to support it.
Well, and there's a little poem that kind of came to me while I was watching the sky a few years ago. It's one of my favorites, and it's one of the only ones I've ever memorized. So I can do
I
it.
I love memorizing poems.
In about 20 seconds, I can do it for you. And it fits exactly with what we're talking about here. So here it is. What is the language of the sky? How do the trees tell of their dreams? We have tamed our ears too well to know. And yet, the wild rhythms of the earth still beat all around us. And within our pounding hearts, a resonance can be found. That, so thoroughly forgotten, is not lost, only hidden. Its song surrounds the lyric of everything we do. That came to me one night while I was sitting watching the sky. And so what that's all about is there is a language to the sky, but it's not the type of thing that we think of. I experience it all the time while I'm actually watching the sky. It comes mm-hmm. with impressions and feelings. Sometimes it actually evokes words, but like anything in nature, what it is something that connects with the energy, with the life, and with the vibration that exists in nature. So all of nature, we understand from physics, is energetic. It is vibrational. Everything has electromagnetic properties and vibrational properties. Well, if there is a language to the sky, and to me, it's something that we can experience directly for ourselves. If it is there, it's something that's energetic. It's vibrational. It has qualities to it. So although we strive to measure the sky in terms of quantitative understanding, and that's what our attention mostly focuses on with astronomy,
sure,
there's a much deeper, richer understanding that's possible, that's qualitative, that has to do with how the impressions strike us directly, intuitively, from our own direct experience, from our own relationship that we have with the sky. Well, and so that's the thing I'm most interested in. My ultimate agenda is get people to turn off the TV. I love the radio, but turn off the TV, go out and experience your world. Experience, come out of your box, out of your house, out of your car, out of your office. Come outside, breathe the air, see the light in the sky, see the beauty of the earth, feel the qualities that it has for you and the impressions that it's making on you, because there's a conversation that's going on there. And it's something that can absolutely enrich our lives. And when our attention goes in that direction, then we have a whole different type of experience and a whole different type of synergy that's being magnified.
Oh, yes, we do. And I have to say, you have to wonder what sort of influence this being indoors all the time has on our population as a whole in terms of their robustness.
Yeah.
So this is the New Medicine Show. Let's give a little deference to
Absolutely.
The idea of being involved in the circadian rhythms.
Well, and if we live in boxes all the time, and then when we come home at night, we turn on the TV, we put our mind in the box.
Right.
So we're boxed within boxes within boxes. And then where do we ever connect with the real living dynamic of what life in the universe really is?
And I have a friend who's trying to reduce the amount of sleeping pills she's taking under doctor's care, of course.
Yeah.
And I said, why don't you get away from those electric light bulbs for a while? Let that melatonin do its thing, you know? Put on some long sleeves when you're reading at night, you know, just so that you can block out their skin's constant absorption of this electric light. And she's doing everything she can to try and increase that natural melatonin. And of course, suggestions from people like Adam would be wonderful at this juncture. But just realizing that there's a rhythm, these lights and these choices deprive us of. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. So I would love to be able to see people re-embrace more natural setting in their indoor environment. Maybe they need a little protection from the elements, but maybe they could take some effort to reincorporate the outdoors inside.
Yeah.
And I believe architecture has striven for that in many years. Frank Lloyd Wright was a discipline of that very teaching. So people like Eichler, who were influential in the Bay Area, they would do their best to create these big picture windows way before there was safety glass, by the way. You might want to put safety glass in those windows if you're living in an Eichler. But anyway, you go ahead and consider all the possibilities of what the indoors and outdoors can do to embrace each other. And you can really have a richer lifestyle with very little improvement in your home.
Yeah, and what I find is that even just a few minutes going out, my big thing is go out and enjoy the sky.
Yeah.
But even just a few minutes spent with the grass or with the flowers in your backyard, even if they're just weeds, my goodness, we call them weeds, but they're indigenous plants, and they bloom and they grow and they thrive. Well, that's a resonance with our own blooming and growing and thriving, right?
Yes, it is. And again, you know, go outside, be a part of that, and also bring a little bit of the outdoors in occasionally, too. You know, a flower here or there wouldn't be so bad, especially a potted one that can be reintroduced to the outdoors later.
Yeah.
I would say, the joy of being a human being is to actually have the experience. And that certainly includes a view of the night sky. We've been almost instructed not to, it seems. You know, nighttime, if you've noticed, all the cars disappear on the streets, we've got a thing happening there where we certainly, as a society, make that our quiet time, and it's respectful. It's nice that people all give each other a chance to go to sleep at night, but there's a time to be quiet and go out and enjoy something meditative, too.
Yeah, this alignment that's happening right now, the thing that I think is a little bit strange and unique about my interest in this is that the whole thing does kind of tell a story to me, that mm-hmm. vibrational language. It's speaking to us in specific events, but then it's also speaking in the whole sequence of events. And what really amazes me about it is, like, when there's a particular moment, say a conjunction or an alignment, often there are other important events that are happening simultaneously or in a sequence before or after. And that's what this whole series of events is happening and showing us presently. So let me illustrate this a little bit. What's happening with this Jupiter-Venus alignment, and I'll give just a little bit of an interpretive angle on this as well. You know, if you watch this happening when Venus and Jupiter are exactly together, which will be on March 13th, at that same time, there's something we call a grand trine happening. This is it's kind of rare especially to have something so exact, but the energy of it, the vibration of it, is something that's extraordinary as well. Because when Venus and Jupiter are coming together, at the same moment, Mars is backing up, because we're passing Mars in our orbit. We're just about to have our opposition with Mars. And Mars is going to back up to a point where it'll be exactly 120 degrees from Venus and Jupiter when they're together. So at the exact moment when that happens, we have this really beautiful harmonious angle. Well, what's also very significant about this, at that same moment, Pluto will be exactly making a grand trine with both Mars and with the conjunction of Venus and Jupiter.
Oh, my.
So, we all know that Pluto's so slow-moving, and although it was demoted in its planet status a few years ago, it didn't get removed from the universe. It's still as significant and as powerful as ever. And that energy of Pluto, let me just break the archetypes down here for you a little bit. Pluto, named also after the god of the underworld and also connected with the element that we call plutonium, represents the energy of death and rebirth, of renewal. And it's about the energy that comes right out of the condition we call winter into the surging blooming of spring. That's Pluto's energy. And so we have Mars in a very complementary angle, and Mars has to do with the energy of choice, action. It's also resonant with karma. Saturn's karma as well, but Mars has the more of the practical aspect of karma in terms of choices. Well, we have that, and then we have Venus and Jupiter together. And Venus and Jupiter are amazing. Venus has to do with the feminine principle, but also with vitality, with the energy of life itself, with that actual flowering of spring, right? And so we have the abundance of Jupiter with that life force, with that blooming. So it's really about not just living and vitality, it's about thriving.
Wow. I want to thrive. I want to thrive.
Well, that's what life does.
Well, have people felt marginalized? Have people been feeling isolated, caught in an economy that they're outside of, perhaps less empowered? I mean, this is an awakening of a different sort.
Yeah. Well, and it's also, with the three of these things working together, the renewal of Pluto, the action, the choice of Mars, and the vitality of Jupiter and Venus together. What these are all about is a set, an availability of an energy that comes and supports our thriving through our conscious action, through our good choices, through our awareness. Mars is also a principle of desire. Venus is that principle of attraction. And so what it's about is it's saying there's a great thriving and abundance that's possible. And it comes when our desire or our attention, our choosing, is focused in a way that allows that energy, that blooming, that thriving to come forth, right?
I was trying to orchestrate. This pod was Mars, this one was Venus, this one... It didn't quite jive. But I do think that it's a wonderful idea to see ourselves emulating or perhaps reflecting these planetary influences and to see these possibilities within ourselves.
Well, one of the things that's instructive in this whole process, I was talking mm-hmm. about big sequences of events. Last fall, we had a majorly mind-blowing sequence of events. There was a comet that came out of nowhere.
It's the day I incurred a terrible injury.
Really?
Yeah, and it was a very anomalous little injury for this very anomalous little event. And I felt that they were two things that were connected, possibly.
Well, it was kind of stunning because what happened was this comet and the measurements of the orbit mm-hmm. of the comet suggested that it was something that had never happened before.
Yeah.
It had the appearance of what we call a hyperbolic orbit. Now, hyperbolic orbit, just to make things simple, what it means is that normally everything's a circular orbit or elliptical orbit. A hyperbolic orbit is something that comes through and makes one big sweeping arc, and it's not a circle. It comes through from somewhere else, doesn't orbit the sun, and then it leaves. It comes in and it goes out. Well, we've never had a hyperbolic comet, ever. We know mathematically it's possible.
This is our first receiving of a hyperbolic comet.
It was the first one.
Okay.
And then it also came in at a very strange angle. It came in almost exactly aligned to the orbit of the sun. Well, if it's not part of our solar system, why on earth would it be close to our orbit and the plane of the orbits of the planets? Why would it do that? And then, almost exactly on the equinox from the perspective of the Earth, it aligns. The head of the comet is almost exactly on top of the position of Venus. I mean, it was well less than a degree that separated them.
That was amazing.
It was.
Yeah.
And then Venus was very close at that time to the sun. It had just come out from behind the sun, starting a new cycle. And the comet and the sun and then Mercury were all together at the new moon, which was just a couple days later after the equinox.
Well, Tony, can you go into your website here just a little bit? Because I know people who are hearing this may really enjoy going to your website to see the beautiful display you put together for this.
There's videos that I created. Some of the first videos I ever created that are about this stuff.
They're great. I enjoyed it immensely.
Thanks.
It was very explanatory, too.
They're short. They're on YouTube, and you can find them through my website, which is New Consciousness Rising, and the URL is ncrising.com. And so there's a bunch of stuff there, old stories, new stories. There's some new stuff that I need to create for this set of events that's happening in 2012.
All right.
There's not a lot there yet for 2012, but there is, for instance, a video that I created for the end of 2011 that talks about what's happening with this grand trine in mid-March. So you can check that out. There's links to that on the site.
Well, I did want to ask a question that's maybe a little less blissful and a little more ominous.
Uh-huh.
When we have an alignment that's so unique like this, and we find that there are suddenly all these storms that we, such as we had with the Midwest, or you know, that we have anomalous events that go, you know, occurred on the other event that I was talking about. Whether it's just a personal thing, or if it's some huge big deal like a war breaks out, or the stock market crashes, or you know, do you study those kinds of alignments as well with what's happening?
A little bit. Usually, I team up with other folks, astronomers, mostly astrologers, who look at the correlation between events and events in the sky and events in, mm-hmm. in human experience and history. Somebody who's one of the best at that is Eric Meese.
Okay.
You know, he was a member of KKUP for many years. And he writes about that. The book that he wrote called Horoscope for the New Millennium goes into detail about that. And he actually predicted some of the events. This book was published in the 90s. And he successfully predicted a number of significant events, economic and political, geopolitical. that happened in the last decade.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. And what he did with that is he watched the sky, and mostly he was watching the patterns in the charts themselves, and he shows these in his book. And then he was getting a feel for what do these things mean, both historically and potentially in our future, predictively. So it's a pretty good study, and there aren't too many astrologers that have done such a thorough treatment of that. There's only a few.
Yeah, it sort of takes you back to the ancient role of people who would look at the heavens and say, well, you know, this is what I predict for the future. I mean, there were people in past worlds that made that their full-time job to advise the king on these very points. Today, we call them NASA.
When they do it well, what's happening is they're picking up on connections or, again, resonances between the previous experience and current or future experience. And when I find that when people do this really well, they pick up on that language of the sky so effectively that we get our own intuitive feeling even from their interpretation, the poetry that comes out of them to describe these events. And then what that should do, that shouldn't stop us. That shouldn't be a cause for us to say, oh, okay, now I know. Now, what that should do is if that grabs you, it should draw you in to have your own investigation so you can see the connections for yourself.
Well, on that very point, in regards connections, I had a friend who informed me that a source of his, boy, I tell you, well, that's very dubious, but anyway, it said that the military was actually concerned about the alignment of the planets in the straight line toward the end of 2012. Had you heard anything about that?
There's actually, I didn't print it out and bring it here, but the pattern for 2012 isn't a linear alignment. It actually looks like a butterfly.
A butterfly?
Yeah.
Tell me about the butterfly.
I'll have to post it. I haven't posted it yet. It's a big, it's more like a bowl shape for the arrangement of the planets that appear in the chart for the solstice, southern solstice, winter solstice 2012.
Okay.
And what's amazing about it is there's two main groupings of planets, as if those were, you know, you could imagine them as the wings for the butterfly. And then at the center is the conjunction of, well, it's not an exact conjunction, but they're close. It's two planets together. One is Neptune. And the other one is this planetesimal called Chiron. It's a little asteroid or comet. We're not sure which. But they're together, and they've been together for the last few years. Well, to me, what those two represent is Neptune's certainly consciousness. Chiron certainly has something to do with healing and with the greater potentials of our own inner being. So to me, Neptune and Chiron together are really about a type of consciousness, a very deep kind of consciousness. And the way I would describe it would be the consciousness of the soul. And so a new type of soul consciousness is at the very heart of the formation for the solstice alignment at the end of 2012. It's really stunning.
That is stunning. I love the butterfly description, and I also think that your idea of explaining it as a consciousness issue is one that many people are starting to get in a whole nother way.
Yeah. Well, we've had this concept of a soul kind of forced on us and interpreted for us for thousands of years. And so there really is something to whatever that is, but we've had this story, and so we have all this connotation that is surrounding what these terms are, but there's a deeper reality that goes beyond all of the descriptions, all of the words, and it's something that we can have our own awareness of, our own direct experience of, and then it makes sense to us in a new way. And then we start to live in a different way because we have a deeper connection to it. So
now,
that soul consciousness is something that's presently emerging, and it's emerging in a whole new way that's freeing itself from all of the previous weight and baggage of our experience, our ideas, and the things that we've tried to put on that reality, the words and ideas that we've tried to weigh it down with.
For those who have just tuned in, I'm speaking with with Anthony McGettigan, Tony McGettigan.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
both.
Yes. And Tony has a website that is ncrising.com. N is a letter, C is a letter, R-I-S-I-N-G.
Thanks.
Yeah. And ncrising.com. And I do suggest people go to the website because so much of what you're describing is visually depicted. There are these charts, and you can look at what's being described or discussed, and there are visualizations available. But the visualization you're offering is very followable. As far as this consciousness goes, Tony is also the author of a book, Voyage into Consciousness?
Yeah, A Voyage in Consciousness.
A Voyage in Consciousness. And you have a second ebook, don't you?
There's other things that I'm working on right now that aren't published yet.
I see. Okay, I thought there was another thing that was available. Maybe it's not a book so much as a pamphlet or some. There was another writing I think I saw there.
There was a couple of audio books.
Maybe that was
one. Was an audio version of that first book, A Voyage in Consciousness.
Oh.
And then there was an early version of another book I'm working on now called Ecstasy of the Everyday Experience. And that's actually been published, but I'm working on something that's a little bit more developed for that. I've been working on that for 11 years.
You know, I am always amazed at how it comes back to consciousness. Whatever field or expertise level you're at or involved in or achieving great dynamic strides within, it comes back to what you're aware of. The rest of it almost doesn't fall into place unless you can focus on that.
Well, and the part of consciousness that we have command over and where we have the greatest, deepest level of our own freedom is with how and where we focus our attention. So a lot gets put on the importance of how you're thinking and so forth. Well, I would say this, you know, get to know your own mind, because what you think is a very small part of what consciousness is. And what's a much bigger bucket is where all of your attention goes, because we're only partly aware of what we think. 100 years ago, Rudolf Steiner told us this, and here's what he said. With respect to our thinking, it is as though we are barely awake. And with respect to our feeling and sensing and everything that we have available in our body, much bigger range of awareness and experience, all of that sensual awareness, it is as though we are asleep, but dreaming. And with respect to our choices, our will, Steiner said 100 years ago, it is as though we are completely dead asleep. Now, what Steiner was also telling us about was the reality and the dynamics of what the conscious elements of life are about. And he was also telling us about the soul. You can think of this, make it really simple. It's the part of you that is aware of the entire moving energy of your life. There's part of you that's aware of every heartbeat. There's part of you that's aware of every connection, every moment of experience. How much of that is occupied by your thinking? Not very much, maybe almost none.
Yeah.
So we're putting all this emphasis on the thinking process, and we're missing a whole lot. The good news is there's an immense amount that we can tap into, and we can begin to become much more facile and capable with, and it has to do with just simply paying attention to where we invest our attention, where are your eyes going, where is your life going? You know, if you want to understand where this is, think about what you do every day. You know, forget about what you think about. Look at what you do every day. Where does your life get invested every single day? And how is it invested in your relationships? What's the time that you spend things on?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you go? You know, all of that together is where your attention is being focused and invested.
I'm thinking of all the militaries around the world who have over the eons learned that in developing the warrior, they need to, you know, develop the mind by disciplining the body and the behaviors, and the, you know, and so those militaries were out to win wars. They weren't out to, you know, stop at midpoint and just say, hi, now do you feel a little bit better? Are you a little more aware? They were creating people who had to be aware of and I'm thinking not in terms of an aggression mode, but equally well in a defense mode, to survive.
Campaign, especially the ones that happen today, they're so sophisticated. They always have a propaganda component. They always have a story that's being told to justify the campaign or the actions or the policy, right? And there's a great amount of energy and a lot of words and a lot of nice sounding concepts that are wrapped around these activities, whether they be war or foreign policy or whatever they are. But you got to realize, and everybody that really pays attention to this does realize it, that's a very thin veneer. What's going on underneath that all of the attention and activity focused on a particular agenda, right?
Right.
So we have to realize that for ourselves, with our own lives, there's a certain amount of propaganda we're feeding ourselves about what we're really up to. But there's a whole bigger story about what's really going on. And the thing I don't say this to inflame anybody or to upset anybody. What I'm saying is that there's an amazing amount of depth, richness to our experience. And if we're so focused, thinking, oh, we can really have a beneficial impact on ourselves and others by what we're thinking about, that's such a small part of the story. Think about what life and experience really is. It's the continuum of every relationship that you have, the relationship that you have with the microbes in your gut, relationship that you have with the electromagnetic energy of the planet, the relationship you have with your food that you're digesting right now inside your stomach, and then also the relationship that you have with every other with every other human being, certainly. But every relationship is important. Those oxygen and nitrogen molecules that you're drawing in through your nose and into your lungs right now, those relationships are incredibly important as well. So with the realm of thought, we tend to be focused in on a very narrow range of those relationships. But your experience and where your attention is taking you in your existence is a much bigger story. And if we're not paying attention to that, or to the degree that we are or are not paying attention to it, to that degree we're asleep at the wheel or actively engaged in being the navigator and the helmsman of our own existence.
Well, I'm oftentimes impressed at who's at the helm, who's driving the bus, so to speak. Yes.
Yeah.
And I am also impressed with your knowledge base, Tony. You're just so profoundly able to bring us to a core understanding. Now, let me see. I think we have a caller here.
Oh.
A caller, are you there?
Hello?
Oh, maybe we hung it up.
Well, hold on. Let me try one more time. Are you there?
We're not hearing him. So maybe see if you can get him back like you did and just don't hang up the phone.
No, it looks like he's gone.
Okay.
Well, our best attempt. You know, they keep me on at 3 in the morning for a reason.
Tim just asked a question. He left this question about this zodiac. It's a zodiac question. There was some controversy that came up last year about another sign. It's actually another constellation that's always been there. And somebody came up with a proposition last year that the zodiac was actually composed of 13 signs. And, you know, you can divide up the sky in a lot of different ways. There's all sorts of different ways that you can do it. In some sense, you could say that the background stars, the constellation patterns that we use, are actually kind of arbitrary. But they do give you a means to kind of track and measure things. Now, would an additional constellation in the background stars make a difference? Well, we just divide up the sky a little differently. But we would just be tracking things, measuring things a little bit differently. Again, what's really perhaps most important from my perspective is, how does your experience move? And what's happening, and how do things resonate between what you're, what your experience is showing you in your life and your relationships, and what's going on in the sky. And to me, there's some interesting things to see when we look at that. I didn't think very much of the discovery of this constellation in terms of the zodiac. It's always been there, but I don't know that it really adds anything in terms of helping us understand those connections and resonances. So to me, it looked like it was maybe a little bit of obfuscation or something that somebody would love to throw in there as a story to kind of negate the value of what astrology does for us. And again, what that is it's just all about the resonances.
Well, I think I've got a caller on the line. A caller, are you there? Let me paraphrase what the call, because I did ask what his question was, and perhaps we'll fail to deliberate on it quite so well as may might otherwise wish. It had to do with dimensions.
Okay.
And how dimensions are influenced by what's happening now. Are we, in fact, shifting dimensions, or is there...
Okay.
Any idea of how to... I think it's a lovely question. I wish I could have patched him through. I'm just... my skill level's constantly challenged by the board. What can I say?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, let's give an example here for a second about this. Let's make it really practical.
Thank you.
Okay. So, say that suddenly I have a health challenge. And I've actually had a few of these in the last year or so myself. So I'm speaking from my own experience. Suddenly, when you have a health challenge, now you're aware of another part of your body, or maybe it's your nutrition you have to pay attention to, or you know, your carb intake, or whatever it is.
Whatever.
Suddenly, now you have an awareness of another part of your life, another set of variables, another set of information, another set of relationships that you're paying attention to. Well, that's a new dimensional awareness. Here's another one. About 100 years ago, we discovered that our universe, our known universe existed, and that Milky Way that we see on top of the sky, that's actually a galaxy. And what we discovered was that there were all these other galaxies that weren't just globs of clouds in the heavens. They were actually distant galaxies that surround us. And a light bulb went off for the Western
caller, you there?
Perspective.
Keep answering, Tony.
Okay. At that moment, what happened was for human consciousness, there was the discovery that the whole universe that we live in is filled with galaxies, and we are in the midst of one of those galaxies. That what our home isn't just the planet Earth with the sun that we're related to, but we're actually living in the midst of a great, huge galaxy that has immense dimensions to it. Well, that's a dimensional shift, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. That is an interesting description of a dimensional shift, yes.
It is. So there's a whole new level of awareness. Now, that one occupies our consciousness related to our physical dimensions. Well, what if there were similar types of dimensional awareness that existed at multiple levels, having to do with the way that energy really works in our existence, having to do with the way our lives actually function, having to do with what this thing is that we call our soul? Perhaps there are all types of things that are already there, part of our existence, and we're just slowly, barely becoming aware of them. Like Rudolf Steiner said 100 years ago. So what he also said, Steiner. He also pointed out that we would be changing and evolving to the point where we would eventually become conscious, not only of our full sensual awareness, but he said that we would eventually become conscious of our actions. And that when that happens, when we become conscious of how we are actually choosing, that we would be a transformed humanity. Because now we would be living with the direct awareness of how our actions and their consequences are connected.
Right. And it seems to me that as people mature, they have a perspective. And the challenge as humanity goes is that there's always this young person who's emerging into the body of the human race and going to take the mantle and run with it. At some point, you want them to be prepared. How do you ever impart to them the many things that you had to discover the hard way? You can't. And that awakening process this is very difficult, because a person who is unexposed to difficulties will never learn how to handle those difficulties. So we're constantly having to hand over the chaos to people who we know are ill prepared for it, because it's the only way that they'll find a readiness within themselves.
You know, there's something that's been happening in recent years that's another type of a dimensional discovery that relates exactly to what you're talking about here. Let me go into it just a little bit. One of the things that we're discovering with the Mayan calendar is that the calendar shows actual patterns that happen in the orbits of Venus, Mercury, the Sun, Mars. Hmm. So we're seeing that there's actual patterns in the living universe that are resonant in the calendar. And what this calendar shows us is that it has patterns that are nested within each other. It shows that it has fractal connections within the calendar itself. Well, then you realize those same patterns exist at different scales within the movements of the planets themselves. And you see there's a fractal relationship, not only in the patterns in the calendar, but in the patterns of the living universe. We can actually directly see the correlation. And what's amazing is that 1,500 years ago, the Mayan people had this intricate knowledge.
Yeah, that's incredible, because that means they had to live on that mountain and be checking out what was going on in that sky all the time. And the mathematics involved? Oh my goodness.
Well, and what it is it's the ability to recognize patterns at different scales. Mm-hmm. So what their art seems to also suggest is that they recognize that between the patterns of existence that exist here in our world and the patterns that exist at much larger scales, like the scale of the galaxy, apparently they were aware of the fact that we exist within a galaxy.
Right.
And so what they were pointing to with their culture, their stories, and with their calendar as well, is that there is a fractal relationship between life on Earth and the life of the galaxy. That's a big part of the story. Uh-huh. Well, what's happening with that is that reverberates out. And so what we also begin to see directly from our own self-evidence of our own direct experience is that when you consider life, we think of our life as my life and your life as your life. But then you start to realize that human life itself is one great connectedness, one great togetherness. And then once you start to see more about how nature works, you realize that, you know, the life of the pollen grain and the life of the tree, mm-hmm. that they're related. And so all these distinctions we make about the separateness of things is less and less important. And we start to see how one form of life and another form of life are really part of one great holistic holographic, fractal whole. That seems to be what's at the back of the wisdom that the Maya people bring us, and it's revealed to us at least a little bit to begin with through their calendar and then through everything that's connected to it. Well, this is a dimensional change, a dimensional shift. It brings with it a whole new understanding. And so relating to what you were saying a minute ago, when we are not aware, or put it this way, you were saying, how do we convey?
Yes. How do we convey
the benefit, the wisdom of our experience?
Yes.
Well, what it appears to me is that the relationship among all beings, among all experience, are connected. Why? Because every living thing is fractal. Mm-hmm. If all life is fractal, then all experience would be fractal. Then my consciousness, my knowing, would be part of that greater knowing. Now, that's what Carl Jung was talking about more than 100 years ago. So we have all these great lessons now that are starting to come back to us.
Right.
General relativity was 100 years ago, too. And now we're having, you know, new and deeper understandings about the way the universe works. So what I want to point to, we only have a few minutes left. I want to just give a little bit of story, a little bit more story about what's happening in the sky right now. Last year when that comet and Venus came together, what happened immediately after that was Venus came down and made an alignment with Saturn. But where this alignment happened, it was right with the brightest star in Virgo. And then the Sun and Mercury came through. Now, there's something else that's happening this year that's about that. And if we take a look at what's the meaning of that, what's the significance of that, the story here is actually pretty remarkable. The Virgo constellation, it's only been the Virgo constellation for us. That's the word that we have for it. That's the story we tell about that constellation.
And that, I think I know where you're going with this. And as a Virgo, I applaud it, by the way.
Well, what's stunning about this is that for thousands of years, you know, many thousands of years, that wasn't the Virgo constellation. It wasn't the Virgin. It was the goddess constellation.
Yes.
And that bright star where Saturn is hovering near right now still is the gift of the goddess. The star we call Spica. It's always depicted as a sheaf of wheat, and Spica is the head of the sheaf of wheat.
Mm-hmm.
So for thousands of years, it was recognized that the gift of the goddess was agriculture.
Yes.
But perhaps we are about to enter into a new dimension, a new understanding, a new relationship to the gift of the goddess. And I'll tell you why this is so prominent in this message, and I want to squeeze in here right in the last few minutes. Because when Venus came through there last year, just before it came through and it met with the goddess and with Saturn, the planet of karma, and with Spica, the bright star that's the gift of the goddess, just before that, it had an exact alignment on the equinox, the balance point of our yearly cycle. We have two balance points, right? Right at the balance point, the comet came and made an exact alignment with the position of Venus.
Yeah.
And then Venus swept through and met Saturn just before Saturn had its alignment with Spica. And Saturn, actually, Saturn was the path of Venus could have gone above or below Saturn. It actually went right in between Saturn and Spica. Venus could have been higher or lower in the sky. It was right dead in the middle.
And with your illustration again at that website, dancyrising.com,
you can see
it. And that alignment line is precise.
Yes.
It's very impressive.
Now, what's happening last year, so that a new energy was set up with the energy of the goddess, the gift of the goddess, and with Saturn, the planet of karma. So a new pattern for what we're attracting is being set in place. And mm-hmm. what came to me while I was watching the sky last year was this little phrase, new autonomy for the mother.
New autonomy for
the mother. So, you know, you think about what's important to the mother, all of her mm-hmm. children, right? So there's a new energy, Saturn, a new autonomy, a new authority for the mother and for her concerns, her priorities, right? Well, that was the first part of the story, was last year with Venus, and it was a really awesome thing to see it unfolding. This year, what's happening is Mars, which is currently retrograde, and it's about to do this grand trine. Remember?
Ah, yes, you were talking about the grand trine.
With Venus and Jupiter. So that's an increasing pumping up of the energy of Venus, right? And with Pluto, which is transformative. And now what's going to happen in August, Mars is going to come through and do exactly what Venus did last year. Saturn, Mars, and Spica. And what's amazing is Saturn is backing up right now. It's retrograde. And Saturn has gone past Spica, and it's going to come back, and it's going to be right with Spica, right as Mars comes through. And Mars will also be in between the position of Saturn and Spica. So what it seems to me is there's a new relationship between the male and the female, between what we attract and what we desire. And to me, what the challenge is, what we're contemplating here, is how will we focus our attention in order to avail ourselves of the truly great and deep thriving that is possible in us, what is really alive in our world. Will we put our attention towards how we are choosing and how we are acting in our relationship with all of the life of our world, not just with our own cut-off individual priorities, but in terms of how we are all living, breathing, and thriving together. I think that's our challenge, and that's what's being highlighted in this series. And the thing is, you can watch Mars now late in the evening, about 11 o'clock. Mars is up, probably about midnight, Saturn's up, and we can watch these coming together. Just as we've been watching Venus and Jupiter, watch them come together between now and mid-March. Then what happens is then we begin to watch Mars and Saturn come together, and they'll be together in August 15th. So I hope we can all watch that together. I'll be out there watching it with you.
Oh, well, I just love when I have a little music on KKUP that's just perfect for watching the stars, don't you? So take your radio with you when you go out. I want to thank Tony McGettigan for being with me today. Tony, you did a poem very spontaneously, by the way, folks. He didn't have anything in front of him at the time. And I was remembering that I have an extra minute here. I was remembering that I know a poem. And I'm thinking, is it Edna St. Vincent Millay? I think so. But it occurred to me this might be a nice one to end on. And I was sitting here trying to remember the poem. It goes, the moon is weaving in the street a tanglement for passing feet that must go always up and down from the river to the town. For men walk there who never see the lovely gestures that a tree makes over them as they go by. These men never see the sky. Their hearts are heavy, and they walk with timid eyes. They never talk. And so the moon is weaving there out of her lovely, beautiful hair, reflection of the branches so that tired, awkward men may know by looking at the ground they love what wondrous beauty moves above. And
that's lovely.
That is a poem I memorized as a child. Isn't that a wonderful?
That's a beautiful. I'm glad you did.
Yeah,
it fits
isn't
today.
That a nice one? That's a good one. That's a keeper.
Yeah,
I think it's the Millay. I'm pretty sure.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Anyway, on that note, Taz is here.
Thank you. Thank you very much to all of you who listen and thank you.
Oh, thank you. All right. Again, I hope people will visit that website because it's an illuminating one.
Yeah. New Consciousness Rising. NCRising.com. Thanks again.
Okay, bye-bye.